Blog Talk Radio.
Originally reported to be a magnitude of 7.8 at a depth of 48 kilometers,
But USGS has revised it to magnitude 7.6. Oh, man.
Arch is a busy little bee.
No, that's not the one.
Oh, that's not
the
one.
You got to go to that. No, this one.
Okay.
I think. Well, maybe not. Hang on, folks.
Okay, let's see.
Occupants of the, Civil Defense National Controllers for these events, David Coxey, said turbulent, strong waves are forecast, but the water was not expected to inundate the land. The threat level was low.
Occupants of the Te Awanga in Clifton Beach motor camps and Ocean Beach settlement in Hawke's Bay were evacuated this morning, and residents of 21 homes along the Humona waterfront were also asked to move out as a precaution. High tide was expected about 10:25 a.m. People were urged to stay off the beaches, out of the water, and not go sightseeing in coastal areas until well after the surge threat had passed. Civil Defense had earlier activated the National Crisis Emergency Management Center. They haven't really said anything more. It's just that there was a threat, so we don't know what happened.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll find out when 20 million people die or something.
That was from LegitGov.
Yeah, LegitGov.
Three U.S. troops killed in Afghan war.
That was yesterday?
Yeah.
Militants have killed three American soldiers and wounded 29 others in eastern Afghanistan. U.S. military has confirmed U.S. military commander in Afghanistan has confirmed that the soldiers were killed during a military operation in the eastern province of Kunar. A Press TV correspondent reported on Wednesday the death toll is expected to reach as some of the injured soldiers are still to be...
The death toll is expected to rise as some of the injured soldiers are said to be in critical condition.
So we're still dying over there.
At least 289 foreign soldiers have been killed in Afghanistan so far this year. At least 2,570 U.S.-led soldiers have been killed in Afghanistan since the U.S.-led invasion of the country in 2001. The security situation remains fragile in Afghanistan despite the presence of at least 150,000 U.S.-led foreign forces in the country. The increasing number of troop casualties in Afghanistan has caused widespread anger in the U.S. and other NATO member states, undermining public support for the Afghan war.
So basically that's what's going on, folks. Seize D.C. I like legit gov.
We'll go to the full article. Seize D.C. by legit gov. Oh, I agree with that.
September 10th, 2011. Seize D.C. Citizens for Legitimate Gov called for protest. Seize D.C. Seize D.C. will begin on September 10th, 2011 at noon until finish. Why seize D.C.? Endless illegal murderers and bankrupting war abroad. Endless brutal and bankrupting attacks on the vast majority of home. This is what we protest. How to seize D.C.? We protest peacefully, although not passively. We do not accept marching orders. This is how we protest. Okay, let's see. Okay. Well, they want to seize D.C., but there's not too much enthusiasm there.
These are the people that are involved. Dick Anderson, I don't know who he is. Dirk Andreasen, Kevin Barrett, Hilton Head for Peace, October2011.org, Ian Rockerchick for God Minch, Joey Racano, Real Politic, Michael Rivero, Cindy Sheehan, David Swanson, and Joshua B.A. Woodward, and Kevin Zeese. These are people who have websites and blogs.
Well, we've had Cindy Sheehan, David Swanson, and Kevin Zeese on our show, and they're all political activists, and hopefully they'll seize the government. Yeah. Okay. I'll tell you, folks, the last time Lila and I were in D.C. protesting anything, those sons of bitches sprayed us with tularemia, a bioweapon. And ever since then, we decided to kind of stay cool. And those sons of bitches, all right, Nicole Pink and Truth and Justice and all the other a-holes, you know, who operated Answer and everybody else, never once mentioned, all right, that we were chemtrail, that we were blasted with this stuff. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, up yours, guys. You know, any protest down there in D.C. is a death warrant, okay? And take it.
This is from Legit Gump. I'm reading this. French flotilla boat set sail for Gaza. Activists sail from Corsica as others pledge to continue efforts to reach Palestinian territory with humanitarian aid. A French boat has set sail for Gaza from Corsica in the latest attempt by activists to deliver aid to the Palestinian territory. According to a journalist aboard the vessel, the Dignity Al-Karma, which left the western Mediterranean island overnight, is thus far the only boat in the flotilla organized by pro-Palestinian activists to successfully sail for Gaza, with most confined to ports in Greece.
The vessel's passengers include Oliver Besancenot, head of the New Left Party in France, French politician and member of the European Parliament, Nicole Kiel-Nielsen, and other well-known French personalities. We are about 20 minutes from international waters, and when we arrive there, the organizers on the boat will decide what the next move is. Quentin Girard, a journalist with a French newspaper, told Al Jazeera from aboard the boat. Girard said that the activists on the boat want to go to Gaza, but we are waiting to decide if they will go once the boat arrives in international waters. I think they will go if the International Committee for the Flotilla encourages them to go.
Meanwhile, the captain of the U.S. ship, who was arrested by Greek authorities, was released on Tuesday, and all charges against him dropped. Al Jazeera's Jamal Ashiel reported from Athens. He has not been fined for anything, and he is a free man. This after Greek authorities arrested him or detained him late on Friday as he tried to bring his ship out and take the passengers to Gaza. The Audacity of Hope, also part of the so-called Freedom Flotilla, set sail on Friday from the Greek port of Perama and was towed back to shore by the Greek Coast Guard. Many viewed that the case today would be an indication of how likely it would be that this flotilla would actually set sail altogether. And it seems that there is a reason for optimism on the part of participants, since now the captain has been set free. Greece's Coast Guard said Saturday that the captain of the Audacity of Hope faced charges of trying to leave port without permission and of endangering the lives of the boat's passengers. The U.S. boat is one of nine vessels carrying several hundred activists attempting to deliver aid to Gaza. Some of the passengers on the U.S. ship have remained on board in solidarity with the jailed captain. On June 24th, an anonymous complaint was filed against the ship's seaworthiness. The Israel Law Center, Sharat Hadin, took responsibility for the complaint on the Israeli media. Alejandro Ferraro, an activist aboard a Spanish boat, Guernica, that is currently in port in Crete, told Al Jazeera that activists from his boat remain fully committed to going to Gaza. We have a few people on the boat now, and they will remain on the boat in Crete until they can go to Gaza, Ferraro said. Some people are going back to Spain, but we are going to continue to keep our boat in Crete and keep people on the boat until we can sail to Gaza. Some of the members of the Spanish boat are currently occupying the Spanish embassy in Athens and have hung a Palestinian flag from the balcony of the embassy. We will wait no matter how long it takes. We have learned patience from the Palestinian people who have been resisting Israeli occupation for 60 years, so we can wait. We are not going to move until our government makes some solution for the Greek government to let us sail away. Activists aren't taking this lying down. Al Jazeera's Alishiel reported, the Spanish contingent of the flotilla has occupied the Spanish embassy here in Athens and has been almost taking it hostage since about 12 p.m. local time. So there is still very much a standoff, which no one seems... Pardon me. I'm going to sneeze. Pardon me. No one seems to be willing to back down.
Kayakers denied.
Detained. On Monday, a Canadian boat, the Tahrir, was forced to return to harbor in Crete after an attempt to reach international waters was thwarted by the Coast Guard, according to onboard activists. The Tahrir sailed 15 minutes out of the harbor before it was intercepted. The Coast Guard pursued the Tahrir using water cannons and eventually boarding the ship. Al-Hayab Latoff, spokesperson and coordinator for the Canadian boat, told Al Jazeera from Montreal that the two kayakers and a Canadian Jewish activist, Sandra Rush, whose name was on the boat papers, were being held. According to Loti, everyone else on the boat remained aboard through the night. On Tuesday, the Greek prosecutor was on board taking statements from activists. The group of activists in Corfu seem to have all but exhausted their attempt to comply with the necessary paperwork for getting official permission to leave port. In a meeting on Tuesday, the Corfu group discussed staging local demonstrations against the Greek blockade of their flotilla, but did not disclose the nature of the planned protest. Most activists in the group seemed to reject the idea of breaking out of port, while the captain of the ship said he did not want to copy other breakouts out of fear of jeopardizing his sailing license.
Okay.
So it doesn't seem like they're close to getting to Palestine at all, huh?
No, not at all.
They're trying hard.
Poor guys. And,
Britain's richest man, listen to this, Britain's richest man to build a giant Arctic iron ore mine.
Bizarre.
Britain's richest man is planning a giant new open-cast mine 300 miles inside the Arctic Circle in a bid to extract potentially $23 billion worth of iron ore. The mega mine is believed to be the largest mineral extraction project in the Arctic and highlights the huge commercial potential of the far north as global warming makes industrial development in that region easier. Documents seen by The Guardian show that Mattel's company, the world's biggest steel making group, Ansaldo Mattel, admits the operation will be undertaken in an area inhabited by unique wildlife, including the polar bear, the narwhal, and the walrus. He shouldn't be allowed to do that.
No, they shouldn't be. They really shouldn't be.
Forty-five 45% of Fukushima children had thyroid exposure to radiation. About 45% of children in Fukushima Prefecture experienced thyroid exposure to radiation after the nuclear power there was damaged in March, officials said Tuesday, but the results were not high enough to require further examination. The Nuclear Safety Commission said in late March, local and central governments carried out the survey on 1,080 children under the age of 15 in the area near the damaged Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power station after the crises.
So they're all sick.
Let's see if we can get the rest of that article.
Take a second here.
But the results were not high enough. Let's see. In late March, local and central government... Oh, okay, we did that. The plant has been leaking radiation substance since it was hit by a magnitude 9 earthquake and a resulting tsunami in March 11. Among children who tested positive for thyroid exposure, the amount measured 0.04 microsieverts per hour or less in most cases, while the largest exposure was 0.1 microsieverts per hour, equivalent to a yearly dose of 50 microsieverts for a one-year-old baby. None of the children examined was exposed to more than 0.2 microsieverts per hour. Children and babies are at high risk of developing thyroid cancer after exposure to radioactive iodine released into the environment. In the case of the 1986 Chernobyl disaster in Ukraine, most victims who developed cancer in the following years had been babies or children living in the affected regions at that time of the world's worst nuclear disaster. A survey of soil at four locations in the city of Fukushima, 60 kilometers from the plant, found all samples were contaminated with radioactive cesium. And the city is located far from the 20-kilometer no-go zone around the plant. The group detected as much as 931,000 becquerels, I don't even know what that means, per square meter at one location. So there is contamination, but it doesn't say what
how
that
much
is.
Away. Yeah,
what
they don't even explain
they're
it.
Giving you numbers, but I have nothing to compare that to, so no. I don't know what that means.
Exactly. That's the idea. Strauss-Kahn plans to sue second accuser. Former International Monetary Fund Chief Dominic Strauss-Kahn, the guy who raped a maid, plans to sue for slander a 32-year-old French woman who said she will file an attempted rape complaint against him. His lawyer said, French journalist and writer Tristan Bannon indicated she would send a complaint for attempted rape against him to prosecutors, likely on Tuesday. Her lawyer, David Kubi, told the news media La Presse on its website, but Strauss-Kahn fired back that he had taken note of Barnon's claim, but dismissed them as imaginary. His lawyers, Henry Leclerc and Frederic Ballou, said on Monday, man, this is such a joke. No. It's a joke. You know, suddenly there's all kinds of problems with the plaintiff, but you don't hear anything about it. You know, what's wrong with her?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Nobody's she's now being anything. Discredited.
Yeah, of course she is. Let's see. They said they were in process of compiling a libel complaint. Yeah, bullshit. Libel complaint. The guy screwed her. The guy raped her. Right.
This is the second person we're talking about.
He probably raped that one, too. Noting the development in New York, Strauss-Kahn's lawyer said Bannon's complaint comes at a time when the untruthful nature of the accusation he faces in the United States is no longer in any doubt. 2007 revelation. Kubi told AFPD-TV that Bannon took the decision because he endured what she accuses Dominique Strauss-Kahn of in France as elsewhere. When you are a victim of an attempted rape, you must file a complaint. Bannon herself told the El Express website that today, seeing Strauss-Kahn freed from house arrest, then afterward dining in a fancy restaurant with friends, made me sick. In February 2007, Bannon was a guest on a television chat show. Bannon, a senior political politician a few years before, had lured her to a virtually empty apartment in a guise of agreeing to give an interview, and then assaulted her. In the broadcast version of Bannon's comment, the name of the politician was bleeped out, but a year later, Bannon confirmed that the Argrovox website that she was referring to Strauss-Kahn. I put down the recorder straight away to record him. He wanted to hold my hand while we replied because he told me I wouldn't be able to manage unless you hold my hand, he alleged in the Paris premiere broadcast. Then the hand went to my arm and a bit further, so I stopped straight away, she explained. I finished very violently. He finished very violently, as I told him clearly, no, and we finished up fighting on the floor.
Oh, my God.
Derailed ambitions. It wasn't just a couple of blows. I kicked him, and he tried to unclip my bra to open my jeans, but on a ledge, adding that she eventually escaped and considered pressing charges before abandoning the idea.
Bannon's mother, socialist politician and blogger Ann Montserrat, confirmed to the news website Route 89 that she had advised her daughter at the time not to make a formal complaint for fear of hurting her career in journalism. Kubi referred to the attack as taking place in 2003, although her mother previously said the incident occurred in 2002. Bannon also says that the then Socialist Party chief, Francois Hollande, was aware of the accusations, as her mother had said, but on May 20th, Hollande denied ever knowing such grave facts as Bannon had claimed. Before his arrest in New York, Strauss-Kahn, a socialist heavyweight, polled as the person most likely to beat President Nicolas Sarkozy in the 2012 election. But Kobe denied the decision to move forward with a complaint now was driven by political motives or influenced by the unraveling of the New York case. Even if the New York case against Strauss-Kahn turns out to be unfounded, ours is not. It is extremely solid and backed up, the Express quoted him as saying. Kenneth Thompson, who is representing the hotel maid accuser in New York, applauded Bannon's decision to file a sexual assault complaint against Strauss-Kahn.
The guy's a repeat.
He's
offender.
A serial offender.
Serial offender.
Well, he thinks he can do what he wants. And so far he's been able to. You wonder how many women he has assaulted who have been afraid to say anything.
Fox News hacker tweets, Obama dead. Fox News hacker tweets, Obama dead. The post, which Fox kept up for 9 hours, stated, Barack Obama has just passed. The president is dead. Hackers have taken over a Twitter account belonging to U.S. broadcaster Fox News and declared President Obama dead. The Fox News, what did you just do, Lila?
I had to clip. This was.
Why did you do that?
Because you had this. You pulled it out.
You,
that's why.
Yeah, but do you realize what you
I had
just
to
did?
Put it on. I had
Lila,
to plug
just,
the battery
you just
in.
Disconnected our entire thing.
I had to plug the battery in. The battery was disconnected.
You just disconnected everything.
Oh, I had to.
We are probably not even on the air now. All right, I don't know what you did.
I had to plug it in. It was unplugged.
Well, you've got to plug it back in, Lila.
I plugged it. I just
happen.
Plugged it in.
All right, now it's not working. You disconnected it.
I plugged it in. It was unplugged.
But it's not on. No, it's not even.
The whole thing was unplugged.
We got a problem here. A serious problem, because we are not even on.
Of course you're on the air. You called in.
We called in, but we're not on.
Of course you're on the air, Leo.
Okay, I don't know. I don't care. We are either disconnected and you're not hearing us, or we are on the air. I do not know. But one way or the other, maybe dead in the water here. Okay.
You pulled it out with your foot.
No, I didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm. That's what happened.
All right. Well,
so keep reading.
Whether we're on or not, I don't know.
You are on, Leo, because you called in.
Okay.
You don't have to be on the website.
You haven't
been this to be logged in.
I understand that, Lila, but we've destroyed our website here, okay?
No, you didn't.
It's gone. All right. Okay. So anyway.
Just keep reading. Take out a new thing, and this will come back on. It's just the switchboard. Sorry, folks.
Yeah, we have an issue here. Okay. Let me go over to another site. Bankers built private empires on public credit. As you have a doctorate degree in economics from a great university, I will touch as lightly as my verbosity allows on facts accepted by economic science and proceeds to occult aspects of central banking. Since the division of labor is the key to all human achievement and its satisfaction, a system of exchange is crucial. Barter is hopelessly complicated. A command economy in which each does and receives what he is told is also hopelessly cumbersome and fails to take advantage of interior individual initiative, ability, and concrete knowledge. A medium of exchange money is the obvious solution. Even our highly centralized economies of a socialized model now enthusiastically embrace money as an indispensable simplifying tool in their economic planning. First, again, this is henrymackow.com.
Why don't you play an audio?
There is none on this
slide. We'll go to another slide.
May I please finish this? Thank you. Medium of exchange, when left to themselves, people for a given geographical area settled upon a durable luxury commodity, usually gold or silver, to use as money. Because money is a store of value as well as a medium of exchange, people save part of their gold income rather than spending it all. This gold was often stored in the vaults of a local goldsmith, precursor of a modern banker for safekeeping. The depositor has received a receipt that entitled them to an equal quantity and quality of gold on demand for the goldsmith. At some point, the goldsmith realizes that there was no reason he could not loan out some of the gold for interest as long as he kept gold on hand, sufficient to meet the fairly predictable withdrawal rate. After all, he simply promised to pay on demand, not hold the gold as such. And better yet, he could simply issue more receipts for gold than he had gold, and the receipts, renamed notes, could circulate freely among the populace as money. However, he soon found that there was a definite limit set on this process by reality. Not all the extra notes issued circulated forever among the public. And this goes on and explains the way banking was established, okay? And how it's been a fraud ever since. And you go to Henry Mackow, MAKOW.com. No, we didn't.
Yeah, we did. We read it last week. Because it's based on a book.
We didn't read it on the air. FDA says drinking the natural food, yeah, this natural food is a crime. If Lila will read that, I will try to get back into the site here.
The Food Safety Modernization Act that was enacted earlier this year gives the FDA almost unlimited authority to decide if food is harmful, even without credible evidence. But farmers who have been persecuted by the FDA for selling raw milk, like Amish farmer Dan Algiera, are not backing down. Algiera's case is going to court. Citizens are irate that the FDA allows damaging junk food but prevents people from making an educated, informed food choice in purchasing raw, grass-fed milk. But that doesn't seem right, does it? Let's go to read a little bit more about this. The article's not too long. On May 16th, Representative Ron Paul asked, if we are not even free anymore to decide something as basic as what we wish to eat or drink, how much freedom do we really have left? Paul was talking about the FDA ban on the interstate sale of raw milk for human consumption. Milk that has not been pasteurized. The ban began in 1987, but the FDA didn't really begin enforcing it seriously in 2006. when the government began sting operations and armed raids of dairy farmers and their willing customers. The New American reports, even if the FDA were correct in its assertion about the dangers of raw milk, its prohibition on interstate raw milk sales would still be, as Paul termed it, an unconstitutional misapplication of the Commerce Clause for legislative ends. Saying he is outraged by the FDA's raid on peaceful dairy farmers and their customers, Paul has introduced legislation to allow the shipment and distribution of unpasteurized milk and milk products for human consumption across state lines, in effect reversing the FDA's unconstitutional ban on such sales. Citizens are irate that the FDA allows damaging junk food, and I read that, but prevents people from making an educated, informed food choice in purchasing raw, grass-fed milk. According to the Washington Times, attorney Jonathan Emmerich, who has defeated the FDA in court 8 times, is focusing on the deeper issues that the case stems from. Emmerich says, We would not be here today were it not for the fact that over the past 75 years, the Congress of the United States has delegated away to some 230 independent regulatory commissions the power to make law, the power to execute law, and the power to judge law violations. The delegation of governing power from Congress to the unelected heads of the regulatory agencies violates the Constitution, which vests exclusively in Congress the obligation to make law. Well, that's a good point he has. Okay. Is Elenin intelligently controlled? That's a comment. Comet Elenin is an incoming spacecraft or an intelligently controlled object, according to a number of presenters at a recently completed conference hosted online by the popular whistleblower website Project Camelot. Several presenters agreed that Elenin will approach its closest points near the Sun and the Earth at a time of extraordinary planetary and societal changes coinciding with the end of the Mayan calendar. A number of anonymous whistleblowers were cited in support of the view that Elenin was an artificially controlled object responsible for widespread planetary changes in the solar system. The conference broke important ground in uncovering some of the mystery surrounding Comet Elenin, in revealing expert opinions and whistleblower testimonies describing its artificial design and the significance of its orbit. In a surprising omission, the conference organizers did not feature groundbreaking scientific literature detailing the seismic impact of Elenin on Earth. Combining insights from the overlooked scientific data and the conference proceeding points to an extraordinary conclusion. Comet Elenin is generating powerful gravity disruption technologies indicative of one or more interstellar spacecraft traveling toward Earth. Let's see.
The fascinating thing here, too, to remember is that we're expecting this. We're expecting Nibiru and the comets.
The conference, Elenin was hosted by Kerry Cassidy and featured 5 presenters who discussed their research data and insights on the comet Elenin. Richard Hoagland, Dr. Joseph Farrell, Keith Hunter, Dr. Johan Kalaman, and Andy Lloyd. Hoagland began the conference with a succinct presentation on the significance of Elenin's orbit and why this pointed to it being either an artificial object under intelligent control or a natural body that has been deliberately launched on an artificial orbit. He placed special emphasis on Elenin's perihelion, closest point to the sun, on September 11, 2011, as evidence that this was a result of an artificial design to draw attention to the profound geopolitical events that occurred 10 years earlier. Hoagland also pointed out that around the time Elenin would be passing by the Earth's orbit on its outbound leg, that another celestial object, asteroid 2005 YU55, would pass only 200,000 miles from Earth on November 9th. This was coincidentally when FEMA had scheduled a FEMA Homeland Security test, where many television and radio networks would relinquish airtime for some security drill. Coincidence, or did national security leaders know something of major significance was about to happen? The next presenter was Keith Hunter, who claimed that the planet radiate harmonic signatures that influence orbits in seismic activity. Hunter claimed that Elnin is a small mass that could do something unusual if caught up in a powerful harmonic configuration. Hunter's most important contribution was to point out the relationship between seismic activity and planetary configurations. Sadly, he was not aware of the work conducted by Dr. Mensur Oberbasich, who had put together an exhaustive study of Elnin's alignment with a number of planetary bodies during powerful seismic events on Earth. The Mayan calendar, according to the next conference presenter, Dr. Carl Kellerman, operates in 9 distinct levels or waves. The 9th wave, coinciding with the end of the Mayan calendar, occurs on October 28, 2011. Kellerman believes that the world will enter a new age based on expanding unity consciousness. While the precise ending of the Mayan calendar is disputed by others advocating a December 12, 2012 end date, Kellerman has produced cogent arguments for the October 2011 end date. He noted that the date coincides with Elnin's crossing of the Earth's orbit, suggesting it may have far more significance than generally attributed to it. The main conference organizer, Kerry Cassidy, revealed that the number of anonymous whistleblowers had revealed that Elnin is a piloted spacecraft and, in fact, was being trailed by a fleet of spacecraft. Hoagland claims that he has been confidently told similarly by other whistleblowers of the artificial nature of Elnin. Dr. Joseph Farrell agreed and claimed that Elnin was either an artificial object, a spacecraft, or a natural object placed in an artificial orbit. In probability, the most significant observation of the conference, Hoagland claimed that Elnin was likely an active torsion field generator. I don't know what that is.
I don't know either.
I don't know what a torsion field generator is, so.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, there's a lot more to this article.
Not really. No more paragraphs.
No. Well, let's see if we can find out what a torsion field describes the influence in a spinning object exerts on its environment. A torsion field describes the influence a spinning object exerts on its environment. In the case of a slowly spinning stationary gyroscope, for example, the torsion field has been observed to be almost zero. However, for moving gyroscopes rotating at velocities of 20,000 RPMs, the torsion field has been observed to have a number of interesting properties. Russian scientists have been leaders in the study of torsion fields. The most revolutionary results so far reveal that torsion fields impact on gravity and travel faster than electromagnetic radiation or radio signals. A Russian professor, Nikolai Korzyev, a Russian pioneer in the study of torsion fields, experimentally confirmed that torsion fields travel at least 109 times the speed of light.
Ooh.
Well, there's a lot more to this, but it's a little bit complicated. Too much to read tonight.
Anyway, check it out. Check it out. It's well worth it. And that you can check out on Honolulu.
Examiner.com.
Yeah, examiner.com, yeah.
Freemasonry, the ultimate game. Look at that.
Let's check this one out. This is about
President Obama, Executive Order 13575, Rural Council. Okay.
Rural Council's Fox Agenda 21, July 4th, 2011. Let's check this out. Agenda 21.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
If you live in the heartland of America, you have to listen up. While the nation was distracted with the Anthony Weiner drama, President Obama signed an executive order that will seize greater power over food, fiber, and energy in our vast countryside areas. The president created the White House Rural Council to, quote, make sure we're working across government to strengthen rural communities and promote economic growth. Sounds great, but get this. The council involves a long list of the most powerful people in America. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner, the Defense Secretary's on it, Attorney General Eric Holder, even the head of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano. Why would Homeland Security be involved in exerting power and influence over the heartland? Why would the Defense Department be involved in promoting economic growth? The plan calls for the federal government to control almost every aspect of rural America. It will also, quote, identify and facilitate economic opportunities associated with energy development, outdoor recreation, and other conservation-related activities. Really? When did hunting and fishing become associated with conservation-related activities? And by the way, what does that mean? The aims of the Rural White House Rural Development Plan sound eerily similar to a UN plan called Agenda 21, where a central planning agency would be responsible for oversight into all areas of our lives, a one world order. Sound familiar? Joining me now is radio host Ben Ferguson. Hey, Ben, President Reagan, 50 years ago, he started talking about this, and look what we got now. We have a White House Rural Council. Are you nervous about this?
Sure, and anybody that's in rural America should be worried about this, because what they're saying is we're going to look at what you're doing in your life, and if we seem that you're not somehow using your land to the advantage of the overall American people, then we may have some quote-unquote maybe strong suggestions for you. I mean, look at the people in Minot, North Dakota, for example, this week, who are having to deal with the government, and guess what? They didn't do it right with the levees there, so even when there's a place with a lot of people, they say, hey, why would I want the government telling me what to do with my farmland? Because that area there is massively involved with farm. What, are they going to walk in with the defense secretary and start telling them where they should farm, how they should farm, and what they should do with their land? I mean, this, to me,
right,
scares me.
Hey, Dr. Helvin, what about it? Why the long list? I mean, if you go down the list, almost every department, I think every department in the White House is represented. Homeland Security, we talked about it, the EPA, the federal FCC. The FCC? Why the FCC and why so many important bigwigs from the White House?
Eric, I think that list means a lot. It means that President Obama is taking what is happening with the heartland, which is a lack of economic opportunity as we've shifted from a manufacturing sector culture to a service sector culture. The heartland rural areas have been affected. He's putting all of his big guns on it. And give me a break. These people are not going to be sitting around at some conspiracy theory around a table plotting the takeover of the heartland. If you look at
Hang on, guys. What's it for, then? I mean, really, it's overreaching.
Consent.
It's an overreach. I have a hunch that people
in
the heartland are going, we're doing just fine, thank you very much, keep your grimy hands off us.
How is it an overreach? He is going to be putting money
into... It's the Defense Department.
The Defense Department, who knows how they'll be involved? It's everyone from a major cabinet focusing on...
Hold on. This is what happens when you have three remotes. Let's bring it around. Go ahead, Chris Plant. You're up.
Well, who knows how it's going to turn out, but it's good. It's real good. This is another demonstration of this administration's obsessive, compulsive government disorder. They've decided that government needs to seep in. And it's not just, you shouldn't just be worried if you're in the heartland. We should all be worried about this. This is government out of control. This is crazy. This is over the top. This is one of hundreds of sort of organizations and commissions and panels that this administration has created to wheedle their way into our lives and what kind of light bulbs we can use and how much broccoli we can eat and what we can drive and what our kids have to eat at school. And They're just seeking to control every area of our lives.
Certainly feels like overreach to me.
Not only overreach, Eric, I mean, it's so frightening. This is 16% of America, what's considered rural America, who basically is now going to have its entire livelihood run by government in Washington.
Right.
They're far away from Washington. They like it that way, is my guess. I think Mr. Ferguson certainly sounds like he's representing that point of view.
Ben?
Yeah, I mean, you look at this. Give me one scenario where the Homeland Security, the Defense Department, and the Attorney General should be involved when it comes to economic development of rural America. I can't see where any scenario those three would fit in if this is truly about economic development in rural America.
Really? Office of Management and Budgets, Domestic Policy Council, National Economic, Small Business. It just goes, it's wow, Doc, every department
can
in the White
House. Can one of you conspiracy theorists give me one good argument as to what's going to happen here? None of you have cited specifics about what
you're ready. You ready? It's a big one.
Please give me something.
If you're going to ask a question, I'll answer it. I'll tell you exactly what this boils down to. You've got Washington D.C. and the Obama administration wanting to look at how the land is used in rural America and see if somehow you're living up to their green standards and their economic conditions of are you actually doing enough with your land and your property?
All
there's
right.
a good
All
scenario
right, guys,
for you.
We're going to have to leave it there. Again, we're going to say thank you to Ben Ferguson. Up next, elected officials are rewarded.
Charles' secret meeting on the 5th.
Let's see what that is.
Distance radio.
Virtually all dietary supplements formulated after 1994. In the wake of hundreds of dietary supplements recently being outlawed across the EU, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has quietly unleashed a regulatory scheme that, if fully implemented, could ban virtually all dietary supplements in the USA that were formulated after 1994. That means nearly all superfoods, multivitamins, detox supplements, medicinal herbal products we have all come to depend on to prevent these disease and boost our immune health could soon be stripped from store shelves, outlawed across the nation. I call it the end game of the FDA's war against humanity. Oh, boy. This is by Natural News.
That means
we read that. The discovery of this new endgame strategy by the FDA to outlaw virtually all dietary supplements comes to us from the Alliance for Natural Health, the leading health freedom nonprofit group in America and the group that consistently reports fact-based information on how the FDA... Whoops, we've got a pop-up here. On how the FDA and FTC are squashing health freedom in America. Their most recent announcement, entitled FDA's New Sneak Attack on Supplements, explains how this new assault on your freedom is being engineered by the FDA. Here's the brief story of where this comes from and how the FDA is now waging a new war on our vitamins, herbs, and supplements. In 1994, after years of armed raids, oppression, and censorship by the FDA, Congress passed the law known as DSHEA. This is the law that has essentially forced the FDA to stop deregulating dietary supplements out of existence, and groups such as the Life Extension Foundation were instrumental in helping get this law passed in 1994. But one of the little-known sections of this law required dietary supplement manufacturers to notify the FDA anytime they use a new ingredient in their formulations. However, the details on how supplement companies were supposed to abide by these notification guidelines were never published by the FDA. And since 1994, this entire section of DSHEA has remained essentially unenforced or selectively enforced. Now suddenly the FDA has decided it wants to enforce NDI in its enforcement of this technically would essentially amount to the FDA denying permission to use nearly all dietary supplement ingredients introduced since 1994. So last Friday, the FDA proposed its new rules on NDI on the Friday before a long weekend, no less, which is a common tactic government uses when it wants to do something that nobody notices. And these new rules run the risk of being adopted as active regulations threatening virtually the entire dietary supplement industry with an eventual shutdown.
Why did the FDA wait 17 years to take action on NDI rules? Believe it or not, this was the mandate under the new food safety bill. The Congress passed into law last year without even reading the bill. So now the FDA has been forced into issuing these new guidelines, and it obviously is going to take every opportunity it can to destroy the nutritional supplemental industry, thereby protect the profits of Big Pharma. So, anyway. So, we got about 1 minute left of the show. I'm going to suggest that you go to this particular article on Natural News. FDA unleashes endgame scheme to outlaw virtually all dietary supplements formulated after 1994. Let's go to Natural News.
This is also a good site. to get
so please
find out about health issues and
find out how badly we're being screwed. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight, and we hope you have a pleasant evening.
And sorry we had those few bumps
enjoy,
in the road. We apologize for that. My computer became unplugged, but I know that that didn't really make any difference.
Tomorrow we got George Dixon and Peter Moon joining us tomorrow night, and talking about Transylvanian Moonrise.
I think that'll be very interesting. So good night, folks, and talk to you tomorrow.
All right, and please join us tomorrow night. And here we go.